this reading of his word. Come this morning to the second in this series on the life of Abraham, the father of the faithful. Last week, we heard about Abram's call to leave his country, his people, his father's house, and to go to the land which the Lord would show him. And eventually, he responded at the age of 75, taking with him his wife, Sarai, his nephew, Lot, and all the possessions he'd accumulated. They arrived in the land of Canaan. And there the Lord appeared and told him, "To your offspring I will give this land." He's 75, remember, and he's no children. Before long there was a famine in the land of Canaan, a severe famine it seems, and Abraham went down out of the land that God had shown him, down to Egypt. He tried to deceive the Pharaoh by saying Sarai was his sister. It was a mistake, wasn't it? But the Lord was very gracious to Abram. Abram was well treated. He acquired lots of sheep and cattle and donkeys and servants there in Egypt. But at the same time, Pharaoh and his household were afflicted with serious diseases. And eventually, the Pharaoh realized what was going on and he ordered Abraham to go back to where he'd come from. And that's where we take up the story today, with Abram returning from Egypt. Notice carefully, notice what Abram was doing. Verse 3 of chapter 13. Abram was retracing his steps back north. Where was he making for? He was making for the place out in the hills between Bethel and Ai, where earlier he'd built an altar. He was returning to the place where his faith was strong, the place where he'd known the Lord's presence and the Lord's blessing. He was going to the place where he'd first built an altar and called on the name of the Lord. He was going to that special place, that place of rededication. And what was he doing there? We read it. He was calling on the name of the Lord. He was back speaking to the Lord again. Abram was renewing his commitment to the Lord. He was admitting he got it wrong. He'd made a mess of things. He was seeking the Lord's forgiveness. He was saying he really did want to follow the Lord. He was saying he really did believe the Lord's promise about the land. Now, why am I stressing? Why is that important? Here's a principle we need to remember today. When we go wrong, and we do, don't we? When we go wrong through ignorance or through willful rebellion, when we try to do God's work in our way, when we imagine that we know better than God, when we go down to our Egypt, then we've got to get back to the point where we broke fellowship with God. We need to get back to the place where we knew him, where we were in communion with him, where we were able to call on his name and trust him and worship him. We need to get back to our altar, to the cross, where atonement was made for us. The only way back to usefulness for a Christian who has strayed from God's path is through the cross. That means through repentance and submission. We cannot come to the cross trusting in ourselves or continuing in our rebellion against God. We must confess our sin and our failure and receive the cleansing and forgiveness that we need. And only then can our lives be open to the power and to the grace of the risen Lord. Being able to come to the cross is one reason why we have a communion service once a month in this church. It's our communion service tonight at the end of the evening service. Great opportunity to recommit our lives to Christ. Perhaps there are several here this morning, just like Abram. We responded to the Lord's call to follow Christ years ago, perhaps. But things didn't work out as we expected. We found the Christian life such hard going, and we drifted off to our Egypt. Perhaps it was even a non-Christian there who said, "Get back to where you came from." Maybe it was. And where do we go? Where do we go? We go back to the cross. We go back to that place where we first met the Lord, when we first called on His name, and we tell Him we're sorry, and we tell Him we do want to start again. We tell Him we really do believe His promises. Abraham renewed his commitment to the Lord, and perhaps there's several of us here this morning, and we need to do just that. Do we? So here's Abraham, living now back beside his altars. And he's saying, "Lord, I really do trust you. Lord, I really do want to be faithful to you. Lord, I really do want you to be first in my life." And that's something, isn't it? That is something. When we can say that. You know, the rest of these two chapters show us that that's not an easy thing to do. That sort of commitment is going to be tested by the Lord Himself. Tested not to see if Abraham really means it, so much as tested in order to make that commitment stronger. You see, faithfulness is like a muscle that grows by being used and tried and stretched. That's what's happening to Abraham here. Seems to me that Abraham's commitment to the Lord, Abraham's faithfulness, is being tested, and tested in two significant areas. First of all, there's the area what I'm calling personal priorities. Personal priorities. What are the things that are really important to you, Abram? That's chapter 12. It's clear from verse 5 that Abraham and Lot, his nephew, were very wealthy men. We read earlier they set out from Haran taking all the possessions they'd accumulated and all the people they'd accumulated. In Egypt, it seems both men had gained even more wealth. Verse 1 of our chapter tells us that Abraham had become very wealthy in livestock, silver and gold. And it's clear from verse 6 that Lot had lots of possessions too. They're wealthy guys. And as the two of them moved around with their herds and flocks and tents, becomes apparent the land couldn't support them while they stayed together. Quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and Lot's herdsmen. The mention of Canaanites and Perizzites in verse 7, also living in the land at that time, I think that's there to highlight the fact that a quarrel, if they quarreled openly in front of these people, wouldn't only spell danger, but it would call into question their beliefs. that they weren't living in peace. So here's Abraham, and he's faced with a difficult decision. He's a wealthy man. The land couldn't support both of them. And yet, he needed good pasture land for all his livestock. He's also a family man, and he's deeply concerned about his nephew and family unity. But he's also a man who'd returned to the Lord, a faithful man. He wanted to remain true to the Lord. What were to be his priorities? What was going to come first in his life? Family, possessions, or God? Now, if you were here last week, I wasn't, but I heard the tape. If you were here last week, you'll remember that they were faced with exactly the same choice. Abram was when he was in Haran. He'd moved from even further north, Ur of the Chaldees, with his father Terah, his wife Sarah, and his nephew Lot. And there are lots of possessions. And the Lord called him to leave his country and his people and his father's household and go to the land he would show him. And it took quite a long time for Abram to do it, to make up his mind. Possessions and family were the great attraction to stay put in Haran. It wasn't until he was 75 that he obeyed the Lord. Isn't it interesting? Here, as he's recommitted his life to the Lord, he's tested in exactly the same area as before. Do you really mean it, Abram, when you say you want to follow me wholeheartedly? What about the family? What about family unity? Here's the herdsmen quarreling. Here's the potential for a family split. You don't want that, do you, Abram? What about maintaining all this wealth? You need good pasture lands for all these animals, don't you, Abram? Abram, do you really want to put the Lord first? But what he does, very generously, Abram, the older man, gives the younger man the choice and suggests they part company. The whole land's before you, choose which part, and I'll go in the other direction. If sustaining his wealth had been his priority, Abram would certainly have chosen the best land for himself. If the unity of the family had been his priority, he'd have worked out some way of keeping the family together and moving on together. But no, it's clear that Abram, living beside his altar, had learned his lesson. Faithfulness to God was to be his priority. Unlike Lot, just look at verse 10. Look at verse 10. Lot looked up. And instead of seeing the land as a witness to the truth of God's promises, instead of seeing it as God's gift to them and their wealth as God's blessing, Lot sees all that he wanted to see, all that he'd already chosen. What does he say? He saw the whole plain of the Jordan. What was it like? It was like, we read, the land of Egypt. Instead of looking at the whole land, he just looked down the fringe of the land, where his eye drifted down the fringe there and beyond to what he probably couldn't see, because he was making his choice really by refusing to look. Although he'd returned with Abraham from Egypt, Lot was still in Egypt. In Egypt, he tasted and enjoyed a much richer and more cultivated life than in Canaan. The kind of world he could fit into. Possessions began to matter to Lot. He'd begun to lose his zeal for living his life around his uncle's altars. He was still living in Egypt, really. And he'd come back, not only with all these herds and flocks, but he'd come back with Egypt's spirit and attitude and priorities. Here's the first test of Abraham's commitment to the Lord. Will family and possessions have first place? Or will the Lord? And it seems to me that that's a very real test for every Christian today. What are our personal priorities? Really, really. The Lord has blessed us in so many ways materially. We are wealthy compared to so many people in the world. And the danger is maintaining our wealth, having a good job. All this becomes our priority and affects the choices that we make every day. It determines how busy we are. For many Christians, believers today, the family has become number one priority. We must spend quality time with our children. We must do everything to keep the family together. Is the Lord really first in our lives? Do we really love Him with all our heart and soul and mind and strength? Really, it's all about where we're looking, isn't it? Abraham had come back to his altar, and he saw the land as God's gift to his descendants. Lot's thoughts were in Egypt, and he saw the bit of the land that reminded him of Egypt. Where are we looking? It determines our priorities. Just notice how gracious the Lord is here. Notice how the Lord came to Abraham as Lot moved off to that well-watered valley. The Lord spoke to him. Lift up your eyes from where you are and look around you, Abram. Abram, now it's your turn to look. All the land you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. And your offspring will be so many that no one will be able to count them. Is that wonderful? At first, the promise had been the land that God would show him. Then when he got there, the promise was, to your offspring, I'll give this land. Now, all the land you see, I'll give to you and your offspring forever. An offspring so numerous they can't be counted. What's happening? The Lord is rewarding Abram, isn't he? Making up, if you like, making up for what he was losing. With family and potential income, God more than made it up. What a gracious God we have. And notice Abraham moves on, he builds another altar. He hoists another flag, if you like. He makes another mark for God. He's going to choose no other way now but living God's way. And Lot, tragedy for Lot is that he lost exactly what he sought to hold on to. Next chapter, we'll look at it. He's taken prisoner. He loses everything. He was possessed by what he sought to possess. Well, there's a challenge. What about our personal priorities? You Christian students, just left home. What about your priorities in these early weeks of a term? The second test to Abraham comes in chapter 14. And this one I'm calling, it's all about public prestige. Personal priorities, public prestige. The chapter begins with this account of a war, the first war mentioned in the Bible. And it seems that these powerful kings, the king of Elam, just north of the Persian Gulf, was a very powerful ruler. And like many after him, he was attracted to the strategic position of Israel. He came sweeping down the Jordan Valley, conquering the cities on the way. He wanted the trade routes between Syria and Egypt. That's why he was there, if he could command the trade routes. A great source of income. And for 12 years, the five cities of the plain, including Sodom and Gomorrah, had to pay tribute to this great king. In the 13th year, they rebelled. They weren't going to do this anymore. They rebelled. It wasn't much of a contest, really. This great king and his allies came down. The land, the valley was full of tar pits, and eventually the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah, trying to escape, were soon captured and carried off north. The only reason it's written there is because Lot, Abram's nephew, who pitched his tent near Sodom, remember, was captured, and it was reported to Abram. Up till now, of course, Abram had been able to keep out of all this stuff. He had no city, he had no land, he was no problem to this great king of Elam. But as soon as he heard about Lot, he'd no hesitation about getting involved. Lot was still his nephew, cared about him, and so with 318 trained men, he went north to Dan, and in a surprise night attack, he routed this great king of Elam and his allies. And as they fled, they left their booty behind, and Abram was able to make a total recovery of people and possessions, Lot included. The Lord was clearly with Abraham, wasn't he? And the whole incident reminds us that the Lord can take charge of our battles and give us insight and courage and overflow the plans of others. But it's then, it seems to me, it's then that the next test comes to Abraham's faith. Having defeated this powerful king and his allies, Abram's returning home, back to his life around his altars. And then he hears that the king of Sodom, one of the defeated kings, wants to meet him. He was clearly going to thank Abraham officially. He was maybe going to befriend him. He was maybe going to offer an alliance with him. After all, Abraham must have been a great strategist to defeat this powerful alliance. He must have had wonderful resources that they could all benefit from down there in the south. It would be good to have Abram on your side. And there's the test for Abram. How's he going to cope with success? With the applause of men? With a growing reputation? With popularity? Up till now, I guess he'd been viewed with suspicion as he'd wandered around visiting these altars. Now he's famous. Now he can make a name for himself. Maybe he could even influence them for the Lord. Does the Lord intend Abraham to become part of this world's power structure after all? That's the temptation. One thing to put God first in your personal priorities. But what about when it's public prestige that's at stake? How is he going to handle success? Maybe that's a test some of you are facing today. A test of popularity and success. A subtle test it is. Because it's so easy to see that as God's gift and to say, well, yes, the Lord can use that to influence people. Maybe you students, you want to be popular these first weeks of term, don't you? But here's a test. Very interesting, isn't it, how this story is told? What happens next? We're just told this king of Sodom is coming to meet him, and then change of scene completely. before Abraham and the king of Sodom meet, there's another king appears on the scene. Melchizedek, king of Salem, bringing out bread and wine. We're told that he was a priest of God Most High. And he proceeds to bless Abraham. Look at verse 19. Blessed be Abraham by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High who deliver your enemies into your hand. What's happening? For the first time we have this title, God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, reminding Abraham that it's God who delivered his enemies into his hands. Abraham's success is due solely to God. And Abraham's given bread and wine. Was he weary from that chase and was he needing refreshment? He's given these simple things from the hand of God. Abraham's been made to think about what's really important. The blessing of God Most High or the praise of an earthly king. The fact that this priest king appears from nowhere and disappears so suddenly, that he speaks and acts with such majesty, means that we must regard him as someone quite extraordinary. We're helped in the New Testament. Letter to the Hebrews states that his appearance and ministry to Abraham here is expressly designed to represent and foreshadow the ministry that Christ would fulfill when he finally appeared among men. Suggested also in Hebrews that Christ himself was present in and behind Melchizedek, speaking and dealing with Abraham, just as he speaks with us today. Here's God intervening in Abraham's life to refresh him, to remind him of himself, the source of his victories, to remind him that his future blessing was from God and not from any association with others. What a gracious God, haven't we? What a gracious God we have. Here he's coming along with the test, not after the test, with the test, with just a word that Abraham needed at this time. And then the scene flips back to the king of Sodom. Look what the king of Sodom has to say. Comes along, give me the people and keep the goods for yourself. What an offer. What an offer. And what could possibly be wrong with that? It was the king's to give him. And if Abraham accepted it, he'd be probably the most wealthy and powerful clan chief in that whole region. Was this part of God's blessing? Well, look at Abraham's answer, verse 22. Look at this. I have raised my hand to the Lord, God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and I've taken an oath that I will accept nothing belonging to you, not even a thread or the thong of a sandal, so that you will never be able to say, I made Abraham rich. I will accept nothing but what my men have eaten. What a reply. What a reply. Can you imagine the king of Sodom's face? But Abram had anticipated the offer, hadn't he? Abram had worked out his answer, especially in the light of meeting with Melchizedek. And Abram was taking his stand. Nothing was going to be allowed to take the glory from the Lord. Nothing. And he tells the king that he's committed to the Lord, Jehovah, the covenant God, the Most High, creator of heaven and earth. He owns everything. I'm committed to him. Only he can make me rich and famous. Only he possesses heaven and earth. No one's going to be able to say it was the king of Sodom who prospered this man of faith. He hasn't the slightest hesitation in turning down what might appear to be a very attractive proposition. Oh, he did accept what his men had eaten. He wasn't being stupid. He accepted proper payment for what he'd done, but he wasn't going to make a penny worth of profit from this venture. Public prestige, making a name for yourself, being highly thought of by others, having status and influence. That's a very real test for Christian believers today. Oh, we don't want to be different, do we? The danger is if we don't take our stand, we'll be squeezed into the world's mold. And the world will soon think that it's made us what we are. There are things that we cannot do. There are gains we cannot accept. There are pleasures we cannot seek. There are careers we cannot adopt. There are fellowships we cannot enter into because of who we are, sons and daughters of the living God. Lot was rescued, but he didn't learn anything from it. He didn't take his stand, did he? He went back to live in Sodom, married his daughters to men of Sodom. We'll see that later on. What a mess he made of his life. But he is the father of the faithful. That's what our title, our series is titled, The Father of the Faithful. And we've seen today how he had to renew his commitment to the Lord. He had to get back to the place where he drifted from and call on the name of the Lord. And we've seen how that commitment, that faith, develops and grows as it was tested. Tested in the area of personal priorities, family, possessions, or God. And tested in the area of public prestige. Popularity, influence, status, or dependence on God. Our faith will be tested in just the same ways. Please God, we can learn from Abraham to trust the Lord wholeheartedly. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for your word. Help us when we fall, when we mess things up, to get back to that place of commitment. And help us when we're tested, to put you first, even before family and possessions, certainly before popularity and influence and status. Help us to be faithful. Help us to trust you wholeheartedly. For Jesus' sake. Amen.